Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Trump and NATO to prepare for war against Russia. The U.S. president has called for a resumption of nuclear testing. And apparently, Tomahawks will be sent to Ukraine. This only adds to the war hysteria in Europe. Also, it is when, and not if, the U.S. attempts regime change in Venezuela. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here. Over the last 10 days, 2 weeks, we've seen a significant shift, at least I interpret a significant shift in the Trump administration's view of the conflict in Ukraine. It seems a form, it's contradictory, a form of disengagement, but engagement. And I said in my introduction, it looks like it's not 100% sure. It's nothing's 100% sure, it seems like, that Tomahawks will be sent. Not that that is significant in itself, but it indicates escalation. Is his policy what Trump, what Obama famously called leading from behind now, Mark?
I think you're right that there is a you know, obvious contradictions in the Trump administration's policy towards Ukraine, almost certainly because there are contradictions within the administration itself, that there isn't concurrent agreement. And Trump seems to waffle back and forth between different factions within his own administration and the blob dictating events in Ukraine, almost, you know, with wind currents. You know, he's tacking to prevailing political winds. And he seems far more concerned about how he is perceived domestically with regards to the conflict in Ukraine than with any concerted foreign policy vision about how to move forward with the conflict. But there has been enough whispering in his ear, evidently, that he, if he wants to de-escalate, then he's going to have to escalate, because the Russians do not accept American terms to end the conflict, because, well, the U.S. is still playing the game that they are some kind of neutral third party arbiter to this, you know, rather than, you know, the principal instigators and participants in the proxy war, which they have previously admitted against Russia. But I don't think Russia is overly concerned with any battlefield or strategic effects of a Tomahawk. It's a 1980s Top Gun weapon, and Russian air defense and electronic warfare have adapted and taken, neutralized far more modern and stealthy Storm Shadows, Scalps, Attackums, ground launched small diameter bombs, you name it. And Western media has had to admit it. It's more the political problem, because this will be, as Trump himself admitted, U.S. personnel firing missiles, firing cruise missiles into Russia. And the biggest problem here is how Russia will politically be forced to respond to that.
Yeah, and George, you know, since we've gotten used to the man in the White House, I think it's almost obvious to ask the question, he can't get a win, so he's not interested, or he's not as interested. Because, and I agree with Mark, he's very much concerned with public opinion at home. He seems to be, and you guys can disagree with me if you want, seems a bit tacitly just going along with the Europeans now. No win, if you can't win, lead from behind. George.
I think that's right. And I think the crucial moment was in Alaska, because I think it's becoming clear that the Russians did come to Alaska with a decision to make substantial concessions. I mean, this was revealed by Sergei Lavrov in a recent interview with the Hungarian news stations, that said that they were under the assumption that a peace plan that had been put forward by Steve Witkoff, obviously speaking on behalf of Trump, that they were going to negotiate that in Anchorage. And the Russians were saying, yeah, that this is a basis on which we can agree. And that's why the Russians keep going back and back and saying, we had an agreement in Anchorage. This is what we had there. This was the basis of a deal. And then Trump, just after Anchorage, you know, issued a lot of statements saying, hey, we're very close to a deal, we're very close to an agreement, then went back on it. And then he just simply, when all those Europeans, obviously panicking about what happened in Anchorage, they rushed to Washington within 48 hours, and then Trump went along with it. And that moment, you know, in the sense that, you know, Trump's policy in Ukraine, I think, has now been determined. I mean, I think he is now thrown in his lot with the Europeans, he's thrown in his lot with NATO. But up until then, and then, you know, which was in August, he had still been open to, you know, working out some kind of an agreement with Russia that Ukraine would not have liked, that NATO would not have liked, but he would then have achieved a win. Now he can't achieve a win, because now he's going to step on this policy with, you know, with this escalation, with these sanctions against the Russian oil giants, the Tomahawks. He's now embarked on an escalation, and it's going to be very difficult to get off that and go back to what was actually on the table at Anchorage.
Yeah, but how much is this different? I'll go to Mark now. This is not in search of any kind of peace in Ukraine. This is reverting back to the Biden policy of inflicting a strategic defeat on Russia. How is the Trump policy now really any different? I mean, the rhetoric and changing his mind, flip-flopping and all that, all that's all baked in. But if you look at the overriding goal, it's the same as the Biden administration. They're not going to win in Ukraine, so they have to defeat Russia. I mean, this is the contradiction. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I don't actually think that there's any real hope or a goal of inflicting a strategic defeat on Russia. It's more avoiding, as long as possible, a strategic defeat for the United States in Ukraine, right? It's not that they believe they can defeat Russia. It's just they hope that they can raise the costs enough that Russia will not get as much of a defeat of the United States as it might otherwise have gotten, right? That they might come to the table sometime earlier on terms closer to the U.S., even if it's not on U.S. terms. And actually, thinking about it, I'm not so sure that this is a policy of leading from behind, because I don't think the Trump administration is leading anything. I don't think Trump is in charge of his own foreign policy here. If it is true, and that you know, Witkoff came with a deal, and the Russians said we can work with this, and came to Alaska, and then Trump tacoed out something that he himself or his people had presented to the Russians. It means he's not in control. He's not in control of his own administration. He's not in control of the blob, the deep state at home. He's certainly not in control of the Europeans or the Kiev regime or the media that is driving things. I don't know what he's actually in control in, other than his own puerile social media posts.
That's a very interesting interpretation, and I think we can add a layer. I'll go to George on this here. Let's take Mark's theory of the case here. If he can't control it, and George can disagree, obviously, if he wants, but if he can't control, he just wants to lead the parade. I mean, that's what he wants to do. If he can't influence the policy, because we're going to talk about Venezuela, can't influence when it comes to Ukraine, he's going to be the leader because he wants it to be all about him. George.
I think that's right. And I think that he had first started off as this critic of NATO, that, oh, well, I'm sick of it. You know, NATO is, you know, they're all a bunch of freeloaders. They're imposing their problems on us. You know, it's Ukraine is their problem. It's not our problem. They don't do enough for their own defense. And so he starts off with that. And then he gets persuaded by NATO. All right, well, if you say so, we will spend lots and lots and lots of more money on our defense. You know, we'll fiddle the books, but, you know, we'll say...
Well, and spend it by American arms.
Exactly, buying American arms. And he says, okay, great. I'm the leader of NATO, and I've really strengthened NATO, and they're all bringing so much more money to the table, and that gives him a certain win because it says I have revitalized NATO, I have reinvented NATO. It's now a serious concern, and he's happy with this. And there's a, but the price is that he has to go along with a policy which is very different from the one that he was advocating. And remember, he was actually analyzed correctly at various times during the campaign that why should Russia put up with NATO on its borders? This is obviously detrimental to their interests. And, you know, if I was in their place, I would absolutely say I'm not going to have NATO.
Yeah, but he had
understood this during the campaign. Now it's just all gone and just saying, well, I'm sick of Vladimir. You know, he's just.
Yeah, bullshit. I mean, but it just means that if he can't change it, he wants to be the face of it. OK, that's what he wants. Yeah, Mark, you know, what George said, what we all agree here is that Trump will flip-flop back and forth as long as he's a center of attention. But on a more serious note, Mark, this means escalation. It doesn't, because given the war hysteria, which is, I think, to the point of psychotic right now in Europe, they are preparing for war. I mean, I think when someone tells you that, you should believe them, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, they hope to be ready for war in Europe at some 5 years into the future. Although there's no signs that they are showing any capability to ramp up their, dozen scattered little military industrial complexes to matter anything. And there's no sign that the U.S. is able to ramp up production, for instance, the type of munitions and equipment needed for this conflict, which the Pentagon has admitted they are critically short of. PAC-3 interceptors, ATACMS, Tomahawks, yes, and others. So I mean, it's not like the U.S. can transfer these weapons either. I think that both the United States and Europe are facing a degree of imperial overstretch and exhaustion, and they still haven't come to grips with the limitations of their own military capabilities, much less coming to grips with the new reality of Russia's much greater military capabilities. And they're all being completely floored by the fact that they're not the center of the economic world, as China has just schooled the entirety of the West and bent them over a barrel in a trade war that the U.S. started with China and wasn't prepared for in the Chinese War. So they're reeling. Their entire identity and conception of their place in the world and the way the world works has flipped on its head. And I get the sense that they're living in, like Trump, like Zelensky, the European leaders are living in a delusional space, a reality separate from our own. And they're just going, I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
Yeah, well, all it is that eventually Russia is going to collapse. We just have to wait for it. Okay, that's the world they're living in. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Remind you, we're discussing some real news. Well, what is real here, George, is, as I said in my introduction, it's not if, it's when the Trump administration will attempt regime change through military force in Venezuela. That's the way it at least looks right now. If not, they're dedicating a lot of resources, military resources, for what could be a bluff. I don't tend to think it that way. I think the Trump administration thinks of the Western Hemisphere is distinctly different from the rest of the world. That's their front yard and backyard, and they feel no restraint in doing what they want to do. Because my theory of the case is this hemispheric reengineering, and they're going to start with Venezuela. Your thoughts, George?
I agree with you. I think, you know, we have crossed a Rubicon, and we kind of know there's a certain pattern here, you know, that there's a consensus is formed in Washington, you know, forces are put in place, you know, the policymakers are making all sorts of statements, this is what they're hoping to achieve. This is the weapons that we have at our disposal. You know, we saw exactly the same kind of buildup before Libya or Iraq. And you know, at a certain point, it's going to happen. I mean, it's just, you know, we're too far along now to back away. And so I think he's going to do it. I agree that this is part of Trump's idea of returning to the Monroe Doctrine, you know, even though it's totally inappropriate to, you know, what the Monroe Doctrine was about. And I think he sees the toppling of Maduro as a kind of a great victory in the geopolitical competition with Russia and China. You know, he sees Maduro as being part of that nexus, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, even though
I thought it was about
Kim Jong-un, but it's part of that nexus.
I thought it was about narco-terrorism, Mark.
Yeah, I don't think that's a pretext. I mean, it's been used before in previous decades with Panama and Nicaragua, and I guess, you know, like the weapons of mass destruction trotted out in the Middle East. This is a playbook that it has already proven that the media and the public will accept. And I think you're right that Trump sees this. Or Trump and or people in his administration, I get a sense that Rubio is driving a lot of this. And I think his concern with getting rid of leftists in the Western Hemisphere coincides with an American First faction that does believe in reasserting control over the Western Hemisphere here. But they spoke openly, right? That, you know, the travesty here, as they see it, is that Venezuela is in bed with their strategic partners. Oh, and there's the oil, the largest proven oil.
Oh, there's the oil. Yeah.
On top of it, right? Rubio warned that the justification, as he put it, was that Iran was talking to Venezuela about a drone factory. Now, I mean, let's take a look at this here. The United States, all of NATO, goes into Ukraine. They help flip the government there. They build up a powerful military. They have trainers. They erect covert CIA bases all along the Russian border for covert operations. They rebuild the intelligence agencies. They start rebuilding military industrial complex. They start building bases on Ukrainian society. But Russia, saying that it was a security threat and reacting to it, right, is you know, beyond the pale. However, if Venezuela talks to someone on the other side of the world about a drone factory, then that is justification for invasion.
Well, if you're a country that's under sanction, you'll talk to anybody that will talk back to you, okay? But George, you know, we've been here before, at least kind of, okay? We remember that Juan Guaido, I mean, easily forgettable figure, the 2019 coup attempt, which was Keystone Cops. I mean, it was really just a botched operation, and for all of us to watch. Is it different this time? Because the Venezuelans that I talk to, they won't say 100%, because who can say 100%? But Maduro's coup proof, because he still has the military and the security forces on his side. You know, 2019, it didn't work. Why will it work in 2025, George?
It may or may not. I mean, who knows how much money they're going to pour into it? I mean, people can be bought. And I'm assuming they're going to just keep applying pressure and pressure against Maduro. They're going to almost certainly launch missiles. Oh, we're taking out narco factories and whatever, taking out all the military bases that facilitate the export of narcotics. You know, I think they're going to justify it in the hope that somebody within the Maduro circle will turn on him and deliver him up to the United States. I don't think they're going to seriously think in terms of an invasion. I mean, that's just very, very heavy in casualties. I mean, I don't think Trump wants to go
there. It's a big country. It's a big country.
And once Americans start getting killed, that's Trump's poll numbers are going to go through the floor. So I don't think they want to do that. I think they want to scare Nicaragua, and I think they're going to bribe their way into securing this regime change. And they've got this Nobel laureate waiting in the wings. They say, well, you know, she won the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, how can you possibly say no to a woman who's won a Nobel Peace Prize? She has to be the leader of Venezuela. And of course, down the road, I mean, Trump has ambitions. He wants to get rid of Cuba. I mean, he thinks he can solve this Cuban problem once and for all.
Yeah, but Mark, you know, easier said than done. Well, what? Well, okay, let's take the theory. You know, there'll be some general that will turn on Maduro, hand him over to the Americans, get the $50 million bounty. But maybe that general will want to stay in power. Why would he give it away to this lunatic Nobel Prize winner? I mean, my point is, you know, the best plans can turn into a disaster in the first minute of the conflict. Okay, it's possible there could be a civil war. You would have a collapse of Venezuela. Think of the waves of migrants that will affect the entire region. Oh, into the United States possibly as well. My whole point is that when is it so easy? When does it ever really work out, Mark?
Yeah,
well, outside of like Panama. Okay, fine.
Yeah, it's never going to be that easy. But they never really think of the consequences either when they do these things, yeah. Right? Actually, I agree with George, right? This is not a land invasion force. That's the Trump administration doesn't want another Vietnam and they will avoid it, right? The CIA is going to do what they're extremely good at. They are going to attempt to co-opt, to blackmail, to bribe the Venezuelan military, the military brass, the intelligence, the security forces, the local political officials. They're very good at this. They did it in Iraq in 2003. They did it in Libya at the end in Tripoli. In Syria, working with the Turks, they collapsed the entire government in less than 2 weeks. In Iran, it wasn't as successful, but they tried the same thing. So this is what we're going to see here. We're going to see the CIA doing their work. We're going to see decapitation strikes, you know, with tomahawks and airstrikes, and possibly the insertion of a couple thousand Marines and special forces if it becomes necessary. But they hope to get the local opposition, the middle class, the oligarchs of Venezuela, along with what is almost certain to be a few hundred right-wing Colombian mercenaries, they think that they can achieve regime change, shall we say, on the cheap. They see Venezuela as low-hanging fruit. They couldn't achieve it in Iran. But Venezuela is a prize that they can deny Russia.
Yeah, gentlemen, who is the phrase is famous, but I don't remember who said it. A splendid little war. I'm thinking of 1898 in Cuba. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I don't remember who said it. But George, splendid little war.
Well, I think that's the theory. I think it's going to be a lot more complicated than that. But I think since we were talking earlier, Trump thinks that he can get a win and he can say, I've done something that my predecessors were unable to do. You know, George W. Bush tried to get rid of this regime, Obama, Biden, I have pulled it off. And I think that's why his ambition is ultimately, you know, regime change in Cuba. So I say it will be historic legacy. I finally removed this communist regime from our hemisphere. You know, what, you know, Jack Kennedy couldn't do, I did. And I think that's his goal. And he thinks that there'll be some great geostrategic victory over Russia and China.
Is Trump playing Risk here? Mark, I don't know how many of our viewers know the board game. It was from my childhood.
Yeah. Frankly, I think Risk is a bit beyond Trump's level. I think he's more playing poker, because most of this is bluff and bluster. And I mean, this is a lot of it is pressure campaign, right? U.S. bombers doing mock bombing runs on Caracas. That's a pressure campaign, right? He's trying to pressure Venezuelan military and political elite, even as the CIA is working on them behind the phones. And we know this. We had AP run a story about how there was a CIA attempt to bribe Maduro's own pilot and get him to bring Maduro to the United States, you know, to be abducted, to be kidnapped. And they played along with him for 6 months. Thousands of texts, money, Disney World, everything was promised to him and his family. And in the end, he said no. But does that mean that everyone else will say it? We don't know. We don't know. The CIA is good at this, but they're not perfect, right? They succeeded in Syria. They failed in Iran. So, you know, we're going to find out how it plays out. I think we're probably going to wait about a week until the USS Gerald Ford aircraft carrier steaming on its way gets into position, because that will assist with the long range strikes that are going to be meant to pressure and facilitate all of the CIA covert work.
Well, George, we have about 30, 35 seconds here. Explain to me how this is America first.
It has, of course, nothing at all to do with America first. And but what he has done here is somehow he's managed to revive some primal instincts among his base.
You know, McKinley, Theodore Roosevelt, Rough Rider.
Yeah, exactly. Going back years and years. Hey, wasn't this the sort of thing that you used to oppose? Didn't you hate communists in the Western Hemisphere? And so, yeah, you're right. No, yeah, this doesn't count as a regime change war. This doesn't count as a foreign interference. It does.
It doesn't count. This one doesn't count. Okay, we'll see if it counts. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.